This is the Cane's Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's the host of the Cane's Corner Podcast, Adam Gold.
Welcome to the Cane's Corner Podcast. This is Adam Gold, and not a lot going on in Cane's country, but we do have some things to talk about, and we will be joined by Corey Lavalette, North State Journal, somebody I have referred to as the Mike Mayock of Hurricanes reporters. Corey knows talent. Corey, actually, I think the last time I talked to Corey, it was before the draft, and Corey had the night of the draft, and Corey had his own draft guide. He has his own big board. He is that guy, and I love Corey for it. He also knows the inner workings, the mechanisms of the NHL, waivers, cap things that I don't understand because I'm not that bright, and Corey is. So we'll talk to Corey. We'll also have Alec Campbell, my normal partner in crime, Stormwatch Aftermath host, Kane's, between periods guy. Not only my friend, but somebody works with me every day on the day job on the Adam Gold Show, noon to 3, Monday through Friday, 99.9 The Fan, or anywhere in the state of North Carolina along the North Carolina News Network, don't you know? Anyway, we're going to cover a lot of the things going on around the league in terms of return to play, what it may look like, and what are the issues involved. We'll talk about the team. Is this team right now constructed as a surefire playoff team, make noise in the postseason, blah, blah, blah? And we'll also answer a couple of questions at the end of all of this. So with that said, this is the Cane's Corner Podcast. I am Adam Gold, Corey Lavalette, and Alec Campbell. Coming up, we've got Corey Lavalette, North State Journal, Alec Campbell, my man, Stormwatch, Aftermath, and my partner in crime, noon to 3, Monday through Friday. And when I take one of my many vacation days, he does the show. And all right, let's find out what everybody's drinking. Alec, what do you have?
This is the Liberté Cabernet from Paso Robles, $9.99 at Trader Joe's.
Nice.
Very nice. You told me that before and I still laughed. I laughed again. That's how awesome that is.
It's solid. It's Old Faithful. It's one of the go-tos for the wife and I, and has been for a long time.
All right, Corey, you?
Got the Mango Tango Foxtrot.
Very nice. So
that's what's on right now.
Shouts to Deep River and Clayton. I am unprepared. I'm drinking nothing, but I'm also outside, and it's 41 degrees. So if I was going to drink anything, it would be coffee with a shot of Bailey's in it or something, because that's what we do.
So, do we have cicadas in the background?
I'm sure there are cicadas. It might be too cold for cicadas. Do cicadas go, like, hibernate? It's going to be 28 degrees up here tonight.
I mean, I think that's what they do, right? Like 13 years, and then they come back.
Do they? I have no idea. I thought those were the swallows come home to Capistrano or something like that. I'm not sure. All right, let's talk a little hockey here on the Cane's Corner Podcast. And I was thinking as I was making notes for this, where do we start? Well, how about when will we start? Any thoughts on that, Corey? When will we start?
Well, I mean, it sounds like they're, from what I understand, the NBA's kind of pushed things a little bit and maybe made the NHL open their eyes to starting as soon as they can. So, I think everything most people have heard is that January 1st was the plan, but maybe January 15th was more realistic, and that maybe now with the kind of pressure of the NBA starting up, maybe January 1st is better, but it's so much is up in the air, especially with the way things seem to be headed right now. It's so hard to tell.
Any thoughts on that, Alec?
I mean, I don't have much to add other than, it just feels like we don't really know a whole lot. It is weird right now. I was thinking about this today that like I mean, we'd already be a month into the season right now. Yeah. If it were, you know, if it were regular season and
we're halfway through November.
And, you know, we're going to have Jordan Martinuk on the show tomorrow. And I just found myself wondering, like, what's it like being a player right now who's so used to being in the thrust of a season, the early parts of the season right now? You know, how weird is it for them? But, man, so much is up in the air, as Corey said. I mean, I don't imagine anything will happen until the first of the year. I feel like that just makes sense. It's like it's sort of a good line of demarcation. You start the new year and then you can start the season. But man, we don't even know, you know, are they going to play in home arenas? Are they going to have a bunch of different bubbles? Are they going to have,
we have a lot of things to hash out here.
How are they even going to execute the season? I mean, it's just, it's wild right now.
I'm going to bring up something here. And as Corey, you pointed out, the NBA may be pushing the NHL a little bit. I know it's sort of a joke that the NBA, or rather the NHL, is sort of the NBA's shadow. There was a moment of leadership by the NHL because I thought that they took the lead in the return to play. They announced they were ahead of the NBA, and frankly, everybody gave the NBA tons of credit, which they deserved. But I think the NHL just did it. I think they did it right, and I think they never within the hockey circles, people gave the NHL credit. But outside, everybody was like, oh man, the NBA did a great job. I'm like, wait a second. The NHL tested everybody every day for basically 3 months and had zero positive tests. All right. But
they also didn't have anybody go to a strip club to get chicken or anything.
Yeah, but the chicken wings are good.
Hey, that's a well-known strip club with great food.
That's a well-known strip club food.
Yeah.
By the way,
it is. I mean, what's his name? He talked about having parties catered in the past from that place.
Was that Lou Williams?
Guy has his own wings named after him.
It's Lou Williams, right? Right.
Yeah. Place is legit.
So yeah, Magic City's got great wings. I understand what Kendrick Perkins said. You don't necessarily go for the wings. You go for the breast, but I get all that.
The thighs.
Did you guys read Emily Kaplan and Greg Wyshynski's piece about what they did? A lot of people brought edibles up inside the bubble, which I'm not endorsing edibles. Excuse me?
I loved that piece. Was great.
Yeah, it was.
I think the NHL did a great job. Like, I think that the visuals from home were maybe the best of any league we've seen so far. I mean, the way the games felt just like they normally do, at least to the viewer on television, to me. Yeah, I mean, it was tremendous. The way baseball didn't do as good a job. I don't think football's, I mean, I don't know how they would pull it off in football, but they're not doing as good a job, but they did a great job for the television viewer.
All right, let me bring this in because the NBA did announce a return, and they're going to start December 22nd. I do agree. I think the NHL is going to start maybe not January 1, but early in January, earlier maybe than they would have liked. And I think this will tell us, I think, in a way, how this is all going to be structured. The NBA recognizes that the Toronto Raptors cannot play in Toronto, not because they can't play in Toronto, but because they will have nobody to play. The nation of Canada will not allow teams from the United States to just freely cross the border. I mean, you could come across the border, but then you got to sit in your hotel room for 14 days. So that is just not going to fly. We have 7 teams based in Canada in the NHL. I can't imagine that we're going to start a season without those 7 teams in their own division. And then the remaining, do the math, 24 teams will be divided into 3 divisions of 8. That kind of has to be the way, right? I mean, doesn't that just make sense? So, We can have every team along the Atlantic coast is in one division. Although, you know, we'll say Tampa's in the Gulf. We'll put Tampa back and let them stay in the Atlantic, which means that if you did that, Philadelphia would probably have to travel with Pittsburgh and go to whatever that division would be called, the Central. But they're probably going to have to do something like that, separate it, and then maybe you just play in your division. I don't know. I mean, there's really no good way to do it. But the border, and with so many teams in Canada, really puts the NHL in a difficult spot.
I would love to see them do something where, you know, geographically, maybe teams that didn't that weren't together before can kind of get back together. It would be neat to see, you know, Detroit and Minnesota on a division together, or Nashville and Carolina on a division together. The, you know, ones that are geographically close that only get to see each other every so often. I think that would be cool. But yeah, I mean, it's almost as crazy as the last return to play. Like, how are you going to make all this work? And, you know, what cities and states can you trust to do the right thing? I mean, it's the whole thing is bizarre. What cities and states are even going to allow it? You know, who's to say North Carolina wants a bunch of people showing up and
right.
for, yeah. you know, so it's, I mean, there's no easy answers, which is why, you know, just came out today that there, you know, there's been some players put on a committee, and I guess Ryan Dezingle is part of that.
Yeah.
And a couple other former Hurricanes, Ron Hainsey and Justin Falk, I saw were on there, and there's a Biega in there and a whole bunch of stuff.
Biega. Falk was the Hurricanes player rep before he was traded. I don't know. He might be St. Louis's player rep. Ryan Dezingle has taken over that spot from Jordan Martinook for whatever that's worth. I'm not
opining on that.
Yeah, but I'm not offering an editorial on Dezingle taking over for Martinook.
I think it's funny because, like, you know, we went through all this rigmarole with the bubble situation, and for a while there, it felt like we just had it figured out, and we didn't even really think about the next season. We were so focused on getting the playoffs done, and the playoffs were awesome, and then suddenly the playoffs ended, and here we are where we're supposed to be in the middle of the season. We're like, man, this is even more difficult than the playoffs were. Trying to figure this out because you have to get a whole season in.
This is way more. It's not even close. It's way more difficult.
I remember being mad that they put 2 days off in between the Hurricanes Boston series 2 years ago. Not that I mind walking around Boston, but
right.
after a while, there's nothing to do for two straight days. And I was mad about the logistics of that. I can't imagine trying to figure this out.
You know what? I never thought about, because I figured out something to do in Boston. I don't remember what it was. But I was just mad because it was the first time I'd ever missed one of my son's soccer games because he played in a tournament that if they had played the game, if they had played back to back, I could have come back. But they didn't, and that's fine.
You were arguing with other sports radio hosts. That's what you were doing.
Gosh, those people. Just the dumbest. I was just sticking up for Chip Alexander.
You were doing real sports talk radio is what you were doing.
God, those people are hardcore. I could not live like that. There is no way I could take all of that stuff so seriously. Thoughts on fans in stands. I saw, I don't know if you read the article, the owner of the Golden State Warriors, and his name escapes me, and I apologize. I probably should know that. Has a plan to come back. I think it's at 50% attendance. And it involves testing everybody as they come into the arena. They're willing to spend, the Warriors are willing to spend $30 million just on testing fans coming back into the arena, into their new arena in San Francisco. What are your thoughts, and I'll start with you, Alec, on fans in seats in NHL arenas?
I kind of vacillate back and forth about this only because now we've seen fans at games in different capacities. We really haven't seen any fans at games in indoor arenas, which brings a whole different element to the situation. but I feel like they I don't know about testing everyone on the way in, man. It just doesn't seem like that's feasible.
Well, the Warriors say that it will only take 15 minutes to get that test back.
Well, what happens if you test and the person that was in front of you in line tested positive?
Yeah.
You know, like,
or it would be worse, the guy behind you.
You know, yeah, like how many people now have to sit out?
Yeah, so I don't see how that's going to work.
Could you imagine waiting for 15 minutes to go into the arena?
If there was a way to do it safely and easily, and so that people could be socially distanced in the arena, then you could do it, I suppose. But then, you know, what's the line where, because I know a lot of these owners, it's going to cost them more money to have only a half full arena than it is to, you know, have no one at all. So I don't know. Like, and also you have to worry about people doing the right thing as always, right? Like once they're not sitting in their seats, social distance, what are they doing outside of that? Right. Are they walking the concourse? Are they, you know, how do you go to the bathroom? You know,
you hold it until you get home.
Like, how does all that work? So, I mean, listen, like, I feel like I've been pretty, like, I'm the person who doesn't go anywhere, who doesn't do anything, who runs away from COVID-19 and thinks that we really shouldn't be doing any of these things, but we are. So I'm trying to be open-minded about it, but it doesn't seem like a real smart idea to do.
Yeah, indoor fans, Corey, you down with indoor fans? Are you going to cover a game with COVID coming up from section 329 or whatever section is below press row at PNC Arena?
Yeah, I mean, I know the way the barbecue nachos waft up, so who's to say? Is there like a correlation between the distance that COVID can travel and the scent of barbecue nachos? I don't know. One of the things that strikes me about this whole thing, and I've seen it with college football, is who gets to go? Like, you know, sports attendance is already in a way kind of a haves and have nots, especially in of the bigger cities. So what happens in a place like Toronto, where half the lower bowl, more than half the lower bowl seats are already corporate owned and empty half the time? You know, how is all that going to work? And, you know, are you going to, you know, maybe in Carolina, you know, in Raleigh, it works out okay to let, you know, hey, some games you 300 level people get to come and sit, and maybe you get to sit in the 100 level and all that jazz. But I just wonder, how does it work in other cities where there's, you know, constant sellouts and, you know, the ticket prices are sky high? Are you going to, you know, are you going to price out anybody? You know, are you only going to be able to have people there who maybe are only there as part of their corporate plan, you know? Yeah. It's just, you know, to me, there's so much about that just doesn't feel right from an atmosphere point of view for me.
The governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, basically just limited indoor gatherings, what, to 10 people? Did they just to go back to 10 people? Or, you know, other states are doing the same thing. So I know in Michigan, indoor gatherings, no more than 10 people. Last I checked, hockey played indoors. And by the way, this excludes the players. So for winter sports, so like college basketball is about to start, it doesn't include the players and the referees and the other game personnel that have to be there. But I mean, if we're doing that, I mean, then there will be no fans. And my conversations with Tom Dundon about, you know, what they could live with, basically the number, I think the baseline number is like 30% before every time they open the door, they lose money. And it was cool that they actually, I mean, they lost money. Wasn't like they lost a lot of money last year. What they did was they lost the opportunity to make more money because there were no home playoff games. It still cost everybody a bunch of money to go up to Toronto for, 3 weeks. But they lost the opportunity to make money. They got in about 80% of the regular season. But the way it looks right now, I just don't foresee at any point next year, this year, whatever it's called, I don't see at any point where we're going to have more than a couple of thousand people allowed to come to the arena, which means they're going to take a total bath this year. And the amount of damage, financial damage that is going to be done by this season coming up is way more damaging than what we just experienced. I don't know how they're going to deal with it. And Corey, I saw you tweeting earlier about the players and prorated or whatever you were talking about, because Sebastian Aho gets a lot of bonus money. The players are going to feel this pain too, and I know they don't want to.
Right. So they're already getting, you know, there's already a proration and there's already a bigger escrow for the next couple seasons.
Are you rubbing your temples because this hurts already?
It hurts, yeah.
Okay.
And now there's talk that the NHL's asked them to, I guess, I would say that I read what Larry Brooks tweeted, but Larry Brooks has blocked me. So from what I understand, I understand, I think there was one time where he said something about the Hurricanes and I actually this is the real thing. I got the block.
Wow.
But from what I understand, the league now, instead of saying we want you to take, and you know, I said prorated and that was incorrect, a rollback where they will get that money in the future. And that now the league has asked for another 13%, which means they'll be made whole in the end, which I think, you know, if you're making $5 million a year, 13%, you know, and then another 20% or whatever, it stings, especially when you have taxes and you have, you know, other people that you're paying and all that stuff. And it hurts for the guys who are on the lower end for sure. But I mean, that money's got to come from somewhere, and you're basically either saying, do you want the billionaires to, you know, lose money, or do you want the billionaires to lose money? Yeah. And,
I vote for billionaires.
Well, this is what baseball should have done. Baseball, they were being such idiots about it. And I mean, I understand the financial hardships, but probably the easiest way to go about it is be like, cool, we'll take the cut right now, but hit us on the back end.
Right. Well, the problem with baseball, I mean, the problem with billionaires is the billionaires are going to be like, well, yeah, I lost $14 million this year. You know who's going to pay for that? It's going to be in ticket prices, and it's going to be in merchandise prices, and it eventually all, you know, goes back that way. And maybe it all goes back that way anyway, because the owners will have to eat money if the players are eventually getting it anyhow. But on top of the logistics of just how do you play this season, you know, how do people get paid? You know, I have no idea how much the Lightning made on merchandise for winning a Stanley Cup. Not as much as they would have won if they had people, you know, buying t-shirts as they're walking out of Game 7 or Game 6, but, but I'm sure they still made money off of winning the Stanley Cup, and they're laying 30 people off, you know, 30 full-time staff off.
Right.
And, you know, it's so hard to know where the breaking point is on all that stuff. Cause you think even if somebody's making $100,000, if you lay off 30 people, it's not that much money in the grand scheme of sports things. You know,
right.
So it's really hard to throw all this stuff together and know where people's breaking points are on money.
And you can't make up for it by selling 250 gray Whaler sweaters. Those are sweet, by the way.
Adam, can I just add too? Sure. They're like, we're not even supposed to be meeting up with our family for Thanksgiving.
Right.
How the hell are we going to be putting people in an arena to watch hockey games?
I'm with you. I'm not going.
It also, like, in some ways blows my mind. And I admit I am not the guy. Like, but when I look at a football game and I go, these people just had to be there, didn't they? Like, they could watch the game at home on their television and probably have a better experience. I mean, that's the way that I look at it, but they just have to be there for whatever reason. I don't understand that, but whatever. It's not for me.
I think that I thought that even before the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I mean, there are certain sports where, why do you go? And to me, NFL football is one of those sports. I'm like, why? The experience at home is 100 times better than the experience at a stadium.
I mean, and live hockey is amazing, right? I mean, it's great live. But still, it's like, is it worth, you know, putting yourself risk and other people at risk just so you can see a hockey game live when you can watch the thing on television?
Right.
Cora, do you remember Dancing Granny?
I do.
You think Dancing Granny would brave the pandemic to come out to a game?
I don't know. She probably would. I think it's the same as the nachos. If you dance fast enough, you shoot the air off of you and keep the COVID away.
This guy, we should have a COVID repellent or something they could sell at games. Because, I mean, if it says COVID repellent on it, who wouldn't believe that?
A million of those little fans, those little fans in a suit.
Wait a second.
Like that Pink Floyd cover with the light bulbs.
That's it. You figured it out, Corey. All right, Corey Lavalette, North State Journal, Alec Campbell from 99.9 The Fan and Hurricanes.
From the nursery.
Guy I know.
Guy I know, friend of mine, all of that. Man who gave up golf so he could be a dad.
So I could have a kid.
Real quick about this, because I was texting with our friend, John Forslund of NBC Sports. Who's actually going to come up a little bit later on in this, toward the end of our podcast here. And I want to get to the team in a second. But I was wondering, I guess it was allowed on Twitter, what the return could be. And or maybe it was just in a text with John, I don't know. But I kind of think that one of the ways to recoup some money will be to expand the playoffs again. That there's got to be something, you know, some financial benefit to that. So why wouldn't they just say, hey, we're only going to play 56 regular season games? Because that's a reality. If they want to be done by the middle of July, they ain't playing any more than 56 games. They're just not. You can't play more than 4 games a week. And if you played for 16 weeks, even if you took a few days off and you played 17 weeks, you ain't playing more than 56 games. Just not going to happen. Maybe they just expand the playoffs. Do the same format we just did, where we do, top 4 in each conference, or, I don't know, maybe top 2 in each division. You advance, and then the 4 teams below you play in. And then you go from there. And I do think that we're going to be playing completely in divisions or conferences, however you want to call it, this year. I think we're going to be doing that. But I know Gary Bettman doesn't want to expand the playoffs, but I just don't think they're going to have any choice.
And I mean, I guess it comes down to, by the time the playoffs roll around, can you have fans in the stands again? You know, if you can't, then I mean, I don't know that the TV deal really makes enough sense to do it that way. I don't know.
Sell it all to Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know they've got the new deal coming up. So, I mean, that's a big part of it.
But Amazon can have the qualifying series with the Ducks and the Sharks. I don't know.
What is Bettman's opposition to expanded playoffs?
He's a traditionalist. I don't know. That's, I mean, he's never liked it. I'm a fan of expanded playoffs. I like what the NBA is doing, which amounts to, I believe, just 3 more games, not the total in each conference. 7 plays 8, 9 plays 10. The loser of 7-8 plays the winner of 9-10, and those, you know, and now you have the two teams that won go. End of story. That wouldn't take very long. It would take 2 days to do something like that. I'm a fan of that in a normal NHL season, but this is not going to be a normal NHL season. All right, I don't want to do this for an hour because Corey, you have other things to do. We have a family. Alec has diapers to change. When was the last diaper you changed?
I changed one this morning when I got up. Yeah, it's been a while, actually. Yeah. Yes.
Look, that question has been asked of me.
This time it was Trips.
Okay. Good. Very good. All right. The Hurricanes roster. And I'm going to run through this just very fast. And if there's anything that you guys that jumps out at you guys, let me know. Andre and the Finns, Vinny, Nino, Knee Cash, or whatever we're calling them these days. Stahl, DeZingle, Fast, Martinuk, McGinn, and Fogel. Those are your forwards. Slavin, Dougie, Pesci, Shea, combination of Gardner, Fleury, I assume Jake Bean, and then the goaltending trio. Alec, thoughts on that group?
So, My overarching thought on all of it is that you're just kind of bringing the same group back for the most part.
Run it back.
And that's ultimately, I guess, my biggest complaint. And I understand, you know, some of the money situations that the Hurricanes are in or whatever. But I like the group. I like in terms of likable humans and guys who work hard and guys who I think have, you know, I think there's an upside to the team if they can harness it and find it for a long enough time and a consistent enough level, even with the goaltenders. Like, you know, I like to think that a guy like Peter Mrazek can string it together a little bit better. And I know that, you know, we've seen a lot of Peter Mrazek's career at this point. So maybe he just is what he is. But I don't know, like, you know, people say, you know, the definition of I hate this saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over again, expecting different results. First of all, it's not the definition.
Right. And actually, who was it? Einstein or whoever is supposed to have said that never said it.
Yeah. It's a stupid saying, but I said it anyway. But like, I don't know why we are, you know, potentially expecting more from this team when it's essentially bringing back the same group of guys. I don't know. Maybe there's still development to be had for, you know, Sebastian Aho, there's another level for him to get to. I think there is. You know, Svechnikov obviously continues to get better. He was, you know, significantly better last year than he was the year before. You know, so and there are others on the team as well. Natchez or Nikash, whatever we're calling him.
Natchez.
I liked his game. I mean, you know, relative to where he is in his NHL career, and the journey that he's been on. You know, I'm not sure, you know, how great he'll be, but I still think there's a place for him to get to. So maybe they're just banking on a lot of these people to be better. Dougie Hamilton, you know, assuming he has a fully healthy season, you know, maybe that helps them a little bit more. But I still think we're looking at a team that lacks a certain, you know, sandpaperish style. And that's sort of my overarching feeling about what they needed the most. I mean, they have the scoring ability. They've got the defensive core. The goaltending, you know, if it does remain sort of league average goaltending, well, they can hang in some of these, you know, pond hockey games with the forwards they have. And if Dougie Hamilton stays, you know, healthy for an entire season. But they lack the grit and the sort of being hard to play against element that I think is necessary. And so essentially in the end, you're running back almost the same group of dudes, and that's what worries me the most.
Corey, got any thoughts on this group?
Well, you know, I'll parrot Alec a little bit. I think there's growth to be had with some guys. I think there's still some untapped offensive potential on defense that we could see. I think Jacob Slavin has a step to take still.
Yeah.
You know, obviously getting Dougie back healthy, getting Pesci back healthy are big things. And those will be big. Natchez, I think, is going to be a star player, maybe not a superstar, but I think he's got a chance to be a 25 goal guy year after year.
What about Nikash?
Yeah. Martin. My favorite thing about him still is his little gold chain with the hockey stick.
Wait a second. Are you serious?
Yeah.
All right, I got to check this out. If we're ever allowed back in the locker room again, I'm going to look at his chest.
And I just don't think you're going to have guys like Nino and Dzingel, if they're playing, having the kind of seasons they had. You know, I think, you know, you're going to see hopefully some progression there instead of regression.
Right.
But you're asking for things to go right in a way, like what Alec is saying. You know, we're talking about, oh, Dougie's going to be healthy and Pesci's going to be healthy. Well, what if Sabo Terabainen gets hurt? What if
Sebastian gets hurt?
You know, what if Svechnikov gets hurt in the playoffs for the second straight year? You know, that'll never happen.
Third straight year. I mean, he got knocked out the first one.
Third straight year, right. you know, we're acting like that hasn't happened already.
Right.
So there's a lot to, you know, a lot has to go right, but that's kind of how winning in the NHL goes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is what I get to, is are they good enough? Are they good enough to overcome a major injury? And look, I'm not, and this is my overall issue with the club. Tampa won the Stanley Cup with nothing from Steven Stamkos.
He had one goal.
Right. As a fourth liner, right? In the one game that he played.
He played like 5 minutes in that game.
He had a goal. Right. It was gone. Yep. Right. There's like, hi, I'm here. I used to be really great. Here's a goal. Now I'm leaving again.
See you later.
Come out, limp out there, hit your jump shot, and walk back down the tunnel.
He Willis Reed-ed it, right?
Yep.
The Hurricanes they don't have that kind of depth. And they can't survive an injury to, you know, it doesn't even have to be an Aho. I don't know that they have the depth to survive even an injury. Svechigan, Teravainen, Natchez, hell, Dougie. They were a completely different offensive team without Hamilton.
Well, I mean, think about it this way too, Adam. I mean, we talk about the grit factor, the thump factor, all that kind of stuff. I mean, when a guy like Jordan Martinook goes out, you know, he's not a offensive juggernaut, but he brings an element to their team game and the attitude of the team that goes away when he's not in there. So not only are you already lacking it, anything that you do have in that department goes away as well.
Yeah. Go ahead. Finish. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to add that he's also, you know, wears a letter.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's a leader for them.
I look at this team and I think it's a good team, but I still look at them as being in the 6-10 range in the Eastern Conference. And if you're in that range, you need things to go right. And maybe I'm wrong about it. I don't look at Vincent Trocheck as a bona fide number two center any longer. I know the points he put up for Florida for, 3 years or 2 years. And if I knew that was coming back, then okay. But I don't know that's coming back. I don't know that Nino is going to be on a 55-point pace for this team. I think Nino will be better. I don't know about Dzingel, to be perfectly honest. I don't know if Ryan, and I like Ryan personally a ton. I don't know if the way Ryan plays is conducive to being successful the way the Hurricanes want Ryan to play. And while there's personal growth for Natchez and Aho and Svechnikov should get a little bit better, and maybe Fogel will be more consistent, I still don't know that they're significantly better than hell. The changes Buffalo made. Buffalo put a lot of a lot of money into this upcoming season. I'm not saying that Buffalo is going to be better than Carolina, but I think Buffalo put themselves in that mix. I think Montreal put themselves in that mix. And these teams either didn't make the playoffs or wouldn't have made the playoffs. And I just think Carolina's kind of in that group. Are they better than those teams? Yeah, I think they're better than those teams, but I don't think it's so significant that like they're not with... By the way, I put Pittsburgh in the same category as Carolina. I think the Pittsburgh Penguins are in the same category. They're in the 6-10 range in the conference. But, man, they're not Tampa. They're not Boston. They're not Washington. I think Washington is better.
I think the Islanders.
The Islanders. I think the Islanders are probably in the same group as Carolina, but I think they're a more solid version of what I think. You know what you're going to get every single night with the Islanders.
Right.
I think the Hurricanes, I'm not sure what we're going to get every single night.
There's a lot to be said for that, though.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Like, understanding who you are and what your identity is and being disciplined enough night in and night out to stick with that identity. And a lot of...
But they were trending to not make the playoffs at the time.
Yeah, but then they did, and look where they went.
Right, but at the time of the pause, they were trending the other way and the other way fast. So I don't know if they were going to make the playoffs. They might have gotten the pandemic, you know, in a strange way, might have helped them.
And when you're in that 6-10 range, Adam, that's like maybe making the playoffs, maybe not.
Right. That's really my point. Like, I don't know they didn't get, I like Jesper Foss, by the way. I think he, you know, Alec, you were talking about a guy who they need somebody who plays a little bit of a harder game. Frost is a physical player, a great defensive player, and frankly played with Panarin on Panarin's line last year. So he didn't produce a ton of points, but maybe he helped them produce a bunch of points. He plays the right side, so I'm not sure there's a fit with the higher skill guys for Carolina, but Jesper Fast is a really good addition to the team. I just don't know exactly where they're going to use him. Unless they're going to separate Aho and Teravainen, I'm not sure what Fast is going to, where he's going to have the biggest impact. Have you thought about that at all, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like he's best maybe alongside Jordan Staal on a third line. And you just dedicate that line to, you know, defensive zone draws and using those guys as penalty killers and things like that, because neither of those guys are particularly finishers. Right. So, where we were 5 years ago was Jordan Staal was in that role, but he was playing 24 minutes a night. And you're giving up half the game to break even, a lot of nights. You know, I mean, we're not that far removed from Jordan Staal, Andre Nestrichil, and Joakim Nordstrom.
I love that line for 1 year.
It was great.
For one year.
There was more posts and, missed open nets. And I'm going to blow some sunshine here. I don't think this is the year. This isn't the year that you go for it. But if you look at how things are stacked up with their cap situation, even with the flat cap, they have a lot of flexibility, even if they extend Svechnikov and they re-sign Dougie. You know, they have a chance to go and after this season and change the goaltending mix.
Yeah.
If they think that's what they need to do.
Yeah.
They're going to get out from underneath a few contracts of guys that are maybe overpaid for what their role is.
Right.
There's something to say for character, and Jordan Martinook and Brock McGinn bring those things. But are they,
you can't have both of them,
right? Do you want to spend $4 million on those two guys and spend another $2.1 million on Warren Fogle? The Dzingel thing, like you said, maybe he changes our minds this year, but I don't know. But that's $3 million you're going to get off your cap. All of that money essentially can go toward those extensions that you need to do. And then once those extensions are done, there's really not a whole lot to be done in the long term. You'll have to pay Martin Natchez, the year after, but things are kind of locked in place. You're going to get out from under Nino. You're going to get out from under Trocheck. And I'm not saying they're burdens,
but you know, those are guys who are making $10 million combined against the cap.
We got two more years with those two.
Right. After next year, I mean, you know, after in 2 years. So it's like the guys that they're shaving off their cap are the guys they need to shave off their cap. You know, it's your older guys. It's not like you have guys walking into free agency for the first time and you're losing them. It's guys that are going to be on that downslope. And the Jordan Staal deal is obviously the one that's, you know, the one on the slate that is like, well, you just got to live with it. And for all the, and I'm a defender of Jordan Staal till the end of the earth, because I think he's does a whole lot more than a stat sheet shows you.
Could you imagine the tears in Rod Brindamore's eyes if they decided to buy out Jordan Staal or traded Jordan Staal? Rod would be impossible. He would need a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think I think, you know, if you're a Hurricanes fan and you want to look at this, you say, well, we have a puncher's chance this year, right? If things go our way, if Andrei Svechnikov becomes an absolute superstar, which I think we're not far from that. Uh-huh, we're not far from him being a 45 goal guy, I don't think. And you know, you talk about sandpaper, but he's mean on the ice.
He is.
Now,
oh yeah.
Now you don't want him to be your mean guy. You don't want him to be your Michael Ferland and end up, you know, with problems down the road. But he can handle himself, so that's good.
Alec, how many times did I tell you in our the first year watching Svechnikov? Oh man, he's going to get in a fight.
Oh, dude was so naive, even in his rookie year. Like, it's as if he didn't even know who some of these dudes were that he was going up against, which was awesome. Like,
right? Yeah.
But you know,
Tom Wilson and be like,
yeah. But dude, like, here's the thing about that is that, like, when I talk about that, like, to me, it's not necessarily about being a Michael Ferland and being a fighter necessarily, but it's about being, you know, playing with a level of power to your game. That, you know, and just a physical nature to your game, that you have to have, you know, and like, he ain't scared, man. Like, he drives the net as hard as anyone in the league does. You know, he just plays with that's what I think more guys need to have. And then when it comes to, you know, some of the other physical parts of the game, like, you know, you gotta be able to, when guys go in the corner to dig a puck out, they gotta be expecting to take a lick.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen enough, you know, with this team. And you know, like, that's, it's not necessarily a knock, because Jacob Slavin is a tremendous technical defender, right? I mean, he's probably got the best stick in the league, if we're being honest about it.
Yeah.
So he gets it done more often than not, but there's just a, you know, Svech plays that type of game where he's just fearless and physical and skates hard and challenges people and, you know, bores his way into the center of the ice, those types of things that aren't pervasive amongst the rest of the team.
He's a bore bee.
Well, and I think
he is. He's a carpenter bee.
He's beautiful.
And I think Trocheck has that in him too.
I agree with you.
He's not the biggest guy, but he's definitely a take no crap guy. And I think, you know, maybe over the course of a season, we'll all have a better understanding of that. And there are times where Jordan Staal, I mean, if he gets mad,
right?
He's literally the last guy in the league I'd want to have mad at.
Yeah.
Like, even take Tom Wilson or whoever, you know, Ryan Reeves, I don't care. Jordan Staal is like Groot. Yeah. I mean, literally like Groot.
I'm glad you mentioned Trocheck too, because, you know, Adam brought his name up, and I would agree with Adam in terms of, you know, what he is, but I feel like I've got a better feel for Trocheck's focus and work ethic and, you know, commitment to the system than a Ryan Dzingel does. Right. So like, I mean, I know that's obvious, but like, it's like, that's a guy I can trust though. Even if he is ultimately a third line center, or he's not a second line center, like, I'll take those guys on my team all the time.
By the way, I'm just, I hope, like, I don't want to say I don't want Ryan DeZingle to have been listening to this podcast, but if Ryan DeZingle has been listening to this podcast, we're never talking to Ryan DeZingle again. So I guess we just total slander. Let me get a couple of quick things in here before I ask questions. Corey Lavallette and Alec Campbell. There are two contracts. We talked about contract extensions. Andrei Svechnikov and Dougie Hamilton are each entering the final year of their contracts. Svechnikov is playing on his rookie deal. Hamilton's playing on the last year of a deal. It's paying him $5.75 million this year. What do you think they're in line for, Corey?
Well, it sounds like the Svechnikov thing is going to be a bridge deal and not an 8-year deal.
A Braden Point type deal.
Yeah. So I think, you know, he's not going to get what Teravainen got coming out of his ELC, which was a bargain. And then they got an even bigger steal on him with a longer term deal.
Yeah.
But I mean, if he were to sign in that Patrick Laine range, that makes sense, you know, $5 or $6 million for a couple years. And then you see where you're at after that. And chances are then you're going to be paying him, you know, $12 million or whatever.
Well, that's the number that the player should be looking for. I know the team is looking for 8 times 8.
Yeah.
Which they're never going to get.
Well, I mean, that makes a little bit of sense if you did it right now, because you're buying up a whole bunch of years of RFA years where
I wouldn't do that if I was Andre, is what I'm saying.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like that's a smart move. And it's similar to what Aho did. You know, Aho said, well, I'm not going to give you a bunch of years at a discounted rate just because, you know, you think that's the best deal for you. And then that's how we ended up where he's going to be walked right up to free agency now, and he's going to get a second big payday.
Could have gotten him for 8 times 6.5.
Yeah, but
times 6.5 was there.
Right, but that at that point, your coach wasn't even sure if he was a center.
Didn't matter.
So
he was going to score 30 goals playing a left side if he wasn't playing a center. 8 times 6.5. Tom tried to get him on the cheap, and ended up just getting 5 years out of it.
Yeah,
that was a mistake.
Right. I mean, mistakes happen. But I think that you'll get that bridge deal with Svech. And then Dougie will be interesting. I mean, I don't know if we get enough of a feel for Dougie as a person to know whether or not how important it is for him to be as accepted as he's been here.
Right.
I mean, we roll into into a Boston game or listen to that broadcast, or you go into a Calgary game and you listen to that broadcast. And, you know, I think if Dougie were to leave here tomorrow,
especially if he's wearing a Whalers uniform.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Right.
Edwards' heart.
If he were to leave here tomorrow, I don't think people would say bad things about him. I think he's been accepted here for who he is. Now, you know, is he a different dude? Yeah, sure. I mean, but who cares? You know, who cares? And I mean, from everything I know, like, I know people who see him out and about, and he couldn't be nicer to them. So, I mean, it's like, you know, and there's two new dinosaurs coming to the museum. So maybe you roll that into the... No, I'm sorry.
One of them was on a golf course in Florida, wasn't there?
What's that?
Did you see that giant alligator on a golf course in Florida right after Hurricane Ada came through? That looked like a dinosaur to me. It didn't didn't look like an alligator. I'm with you about Dougie, by the way.
Yeah. So I mean, you look at Petrangelo's deal, and I mean, is 8.8 too much? I mean, is he worth what Petrangelo's worth? Does he reach that level? Now he's a few years younger, obviously. But that's the question.
You think Tom Dundon is giving him, what'd you say, 8 point something?
Well, I mean, Petrangelo is making 8.8.
I don't think it's anywhere close to that. I don't think Tom Dundon will go to anything close to that.
Maybe not. But I mean, if you gave him $7 million a year, is that fair? I think
it's fair. I think that's probably, in the high end of where Tom wants to be. It's my guess. Like, I don't think that they don't want to give him essentially that much more than what Justin Faulk just signed for.
Yeah, well, who's the better player, though?
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying I know.
Yeah.
I think I know where their head is at with Dougie. I think they're hoping that, I mean, if you want to call it a hometown discount, even though this ain't his hometown, I think, and I don't, again, the point you made about Dougie, we don't know where his head's at in terms of what he would accept because this is probably the best he's ever felt in terms of acceptance, not just by teammates, but by fans in his NHL career. And there's a price that, I mean, that's worth something. So I don't know if you can roll that intangible in, but I'll bet you the team is hoping at no more than 5 times 7. I don't know where they go if it's more than that. I think they let him walk personally.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think, you know, it's not like they're in trouble with defensemen. You know, I mean, Dougie's obviously I don't want to say a generational player, but he's an all-star level
difference
player.
Maker.
Yeah, no, he is.
But so is Jacob Slavin. And, you know, Brett Pesce has proven he's a top pairing defenseman. And Hayden Fleury looks like maybe it's there. Maybe he needed to play.
You think you think Hayden can play in your top four on a regular basis?
I do. Not this year, but I think he can.
I think I think he was one of their top. Heck, I think he was one of their top two defensemen in the playoffs.
He was great, but I mean, you got to be able to keep it together and string it together,
right?
And then this doesn't even get into the expansion draft where you're going to lose someone. So
I'm going to hate to see Jake Gardner go.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Not without a big.
Oh no, it's going to happen.
Not without a big draft pick tied around his neck.
They're going to throw a second round pick at Seattle.
Ooh, I don't even know if that would do it. I don't know.
There's a salary floor they have to get to.
Yeah, but I don't know.
They got to fill out the roster somehow. There's a salary floor.
Yeah,
Jake can play 9 minutes a game and quarterback your third power play. Sit in the press box.
Jake's fine.
Third power play.
That's right. See what I did there?
they put themselves in the same situation they didn't want to be in with Calvin DeHaan, where all of a sudden you're paying a guy to play top 4 minutes and he's a third pairing guy. And that doesn't mean Calvin DeHaan's a bad player. And it doesn't mean Jake Gardner's a bad player. It just means you've kind of blown up the Jim Rutherford slotting method.
I had a source in the Hurricanes front office that told me that the debate about Jake Gardner was mixed, but that ultimately he thought, yeah, I'm sure he can still skate. And then we found out for at least much of the season, it looked like he was getting a little bit better at the end, before the pause. But he just couldn't skate, and Jake's got to be able to skate to play. Let me ask a couple of I put out.
Dude was falling over. He literally couldn't skate.
That's a problem.
Like, it wasn't even about speed. It was about like staying upright.
And then Brady Shea's the exact opposite. You watch Brady Shea for a period, and you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be all world.
Yeah.
And then you look at the numbers at the end of the night, and you look at the some of its parts, and you're just like, man, it's all there. When is it going to come together? Yeah. It's almost like if you could take them two and smoosh them together, you could let Dougie Hamilton walk.
Yeah, look, Shea has a chance. And I'm interested to see Shea playing in this system. I really am. I think Shea has a chance. He created a ton of chances last year that he just didn't finish. He has to stop giving the puck away. He has a Daniel Jones quality about him we have to get rid of. But if he can do that, then we can be fine. All right, I threw out some kind of a blanket thing on Twitter, and I just asked, hey, any questions? Corey, Alec, and I will address them. So we'll do this from Iron Kaniac on Twitter. Any news on the David Ayers documentary? That is such an automatic, it's a made-for-television tearjerker. But do you have any news on the David Ayers doc, Corey?
I have nothing.
You? Nothing?
who's going to play me is all I want, is all I care about.
Let's see. Who would play Corey? Alec, you got an idea who would play Corey?
I have to think about that, actually.
Like, if Philip Seymour Hoffman was alive, it would be him.
Yeah, I mean, it'd probably be good to just prop me up in the corner dead.
Wow.
Philip Seymour Hoffman up in the corner, and that's me.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Come up. Wilford Brimley is no longer alive.
Yeah. Jesus.
He died.
Not that old. Come on.
He died. I was thinking of a young Wilford Brimley. I wasn't thinking about Quaker Oats Wilford Brimley.
My friends have told me I look like the guy that's like the cast out from Bare Naked Ladies.
Drew Carey will play Corey Lavallette.
I can spin a wheel. There you go. Let's do it.
There you go. All right, let's move on. So none of us have any news in the David Ayers doc. Sorry to disappoint you, Iron Caney.
Sure, it'll be on Disney Plus or something like this.
From Rob Treadway. Goaltending mix. I purposely didn't get into goaltending because I wanted to wait for the question. Goaltending mix, is it going to stay the same? Does Ned finally get his chance?
Well, I mean, my question is, like, is the plan to, like, I kind of want to see Ned get his chance, but I also think that the best goaltending tandem that they have are the two guys that they had last year, unless the plan is to try to go out and find, you know, someone else from some other team. So, like, I can't, because both those guys are under contract for another year, right? And yes. Ned's now on a one-way deal, right?
Correct. Like, Ned's going to get paid $750 wherever he plays.
So one of those guys ain't going to be here, right?
Right.
Yeah, well, if this is a year to carry three goalies. You're going to have COVID issues. Look, I can make an argument that they should go out and re-sign Sammy Vatanen right now. They should give him $1 million to be their eighth defenseman.
I mean, what are the options? Like, in terms of, I mean, is trading one of them away on the table, or trading for another goaltender on the table for them?
I just think that time's come and gone.
That's what I'm saying. Like, who's available now? I mean, a bunch of guys have been signed already. So for me, it's like, if you want the most proven tandem that gives you the best chance to win, I mean, we don't really know about Ned that much yet, but it's Reimer and Mrazek again, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it was unfit. Like, people got mad last year that Ned never really got a shot, but as soon as he could go through waivers without having to clear, you know, without having to clear, that made it clear who was going to be the odd man out. I mean, it was obvious from Jump Street. And
does he have to pass through waivers this year?
He does. So it's make or break time with him. But at the same time, who's taking him? Who has the cap space to roll the dice? I mean, maybe somebody like Buffalo would. I mean, their goaltending situation's a mess, but it's not like you're putting an established guy through waivers. Now,
he only makes $750.
Right, but I mean, the cap is such a mess right now. You know, and it's not like you're getting a guy that is, you know, an established guy. Now, flip side of that, what if you put James Reimer through waivers? What if you put Peter Mrazek through waivers? Now, I'm not suggesting that's what's going to happen, but if you do that, does a team take a stab at one of them to try to shore up their goaltending situation? In which case, you know, now you're glad you have three goalies under contract.
Right.
They had three goalies on one-way deals last year too. I mean, Anton Forsberg was on a one-way deal because of the whole RFA mess that happened, arbitration mess. So you can bury Ned. I mean, you could just bury him and then pay him. It's not like it's going to hurt your cap if he clears waivers. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I hope he didn't buy a place in Charlotte. He won't be living there anymore?
No, he will not.
In Chicago.
The Chicago Wolves are stacked.
Yeah, that's all I can think about is these poor AHL guys who now have to find a way to pay rent in Chicago instead of, instead of somewhere else.
That's right. They're all going to be rooming together.
No, you could be in Scranton instead.
That's true. Yeah. Scranton's lovely. It is absolutely lovely. My own feeling on the goaltending is, Alec, you're right. Mrazek and Reimer is the best tandem, best two of those three. But I know their plan last year was even, you know, initially their plan was to bring back Mrazek and McElhinney and also work Nedeljkovic into the mix. And that plan didn't change when Reimer ultimately subbed for McElhinney. That was their plan. Because they also, remember, Mrazek didn't get hurt last year. And he got hurt twice the year before. McElhinney was injured also. They didn't get hurt until they both got hurt at the same time. And then suddenly the goaltending was Forsberg and Nedeljkovic, which didn't look good, by the way. When that was the goaltending tandem.
Forsberg was the better goalie, wasn't he?
It was debatable. I don't think there was a better goalie. I think there was a less worse goalie. Although Ned did get the win. Their one win in that, I believe, was Ned. But neither played great.
Someone should make a movie out of this.
Oh, the goaltending, the goaltending saga, the goaltender wars. That sounds more like a show for TLC. But there was a time in this offseason I thought they were going to go after Darcy Kemper, make a trade, that Arizona was looking to trim some salary. They were going to go with Antti Raanta as their goalie, and that all they really needed was a credible backup. But Carolina was going to try and pawn off some other salary on Arizona, and I don't think Arizona wanted to do that. Reimer's salary cap number is bigger, but I don't think there's a lot of money owed to him on his current contract. So they, you know, he's more attractive as a trade piece in that regard. Final question, and this is a great way to end from the Goose CO. I don't know what CO means. The Goose Company, maybe. I'm not sure. Why do we have a trash owner, cheap, that didn't bring back the best broadcaster in the sport? And why is our head coach the lowest paid in the league? By the way, I hold grudges.
You think?
Do we want to answer this?
I mean, the answer that I have is I don't know. I don't know the reasons behind both of those things, because it seems to me, at least in the case of John Forslund, that, I mean, you have a guy who is, in my very biased opinion, the best voice in the game right now, and you have him in your home market.
Yeah.
Like, guys that do national broadcasts have home teams a lot of times as well, and he's been with the team forever. And he has a tremendous relationship with the fan base, and he's been a great ambassador for the team. And you can, I guess, in some roundabout way, showcase that when he does do NBC games. I mean, there's really no downside to it. And he's a tremendous human being. So I have no good answer for that. In terms of Rod Brindamore, I don't have any good answer for that either. Other than, you know, maybe you could make the case that because Brindamore was sort of an unproven coach, that he had never been a head coach before, that you could get away with, you know, not paying him a ton of money. But probably at this point, he's proven himself.
I think so. Corey, you want to take a stab at those, at that?
All right. No matter. Anyway,
I think Corey needs another whiskey tango foxtrot.
Yeah, it's empty. I'm gonna have to do the crush on the forehead. To me, I mean, I think it's the same answer. I think Tom Dundon doesn't have a problem spending money. He has a problem spending. What he wants is he wants people who want to do the job more than they care about the money, I think, is what. And I'm not saying John Forslund cares more about the money. I knew this wasn't going to come out right.
And Forsman is listening, by the way, just so you know.
Sure. Yeah. Well, tread lightly. I already got in my mentions once about, and I think it was actually replying to this same Twitter account. So now I'm like, is this John's burner account? So I think what you have is you have a situation where Tom looks for above everything else, above the emotional side of it. He says, what is the value of this to the franchise? And John has an immense value to the franchise for all the people that love the Hurricanes.
Really?
They love the Hurricanes. They love John. And I love John. I mean, John and I are from the same area. John and I, you know, I was going to Springfield Indians games when John was there.
Wow, look at this.
Yeah, I mean, I actually got to mention a Native American sporting team.
Look at that.
So I mean, John,
those don't exist anymore. It's now the hockey team in Springfield. Well,
yeah, it was the Falcons, and now they're the Thunderbirds. But the issue is, I think, is that Tom then says, and I think this is the same thing that happened with Chuck Caton. Okay, but where is my value on this? Where is the new money that comes with keeping John Forslund as opposed to promoting another person who is frankly nearly as beloved and as good with the fans in Mike Maniscalco, who I think we all adore Mike too. And it's stinks.
It makes a lot less money.
And it stinks to have to pit them against each other. And this goes back to Rod Brind'Amour. Like, Rod wanted this.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, Rod comes into the negotiation and says, Tom, there's nothing I want more than this. And Tom says, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, right. Then I'm going to slide this paper across. And if you want it, show me you want it. Now, that's going to get rectified sometime this year.
Yes.
You know, this in the next 12 months.
Yep.
Rod's going to get paid. Now, he might not get paid what Mike Babcock got paid in Toronto, but he's going to get paid. And he's shown that he has that value over just wanting the job. Now, again, this is all coming out horrible because it makes it sound like I don't feel like John has that value. And I think he does. But I think what Tom probably said was, John, we know you're the best. We can't pay you like the best. Go out and get paid like the best. And that's how it ended. And it's sad and it hurts and it sucks. And John is amazing, and it sucks for everyone involved. But you know, to call Tom a cheap owner, I think.
Look, I disagree with the notion that he's a cheap owner. Tom Dundon will not; he does not hesitate to spend money on the hockey team. Does not. They did a lot of really good things like the guts of PNC Arena, a lot of good things for the players. He will spend money for the players. There is no question about it. Corey, you got it right. Tom Dundon does not see value in what John does. I think he could not be more incorrect about that, because there is, and I get back to this, Alec, you've heard me talk about it this way before, because I did it for like 2 years. When Tom Dundon became the owner, all he talked about was fan service. We got to make the fans happy. We got to make the fans remember that they came here. We got to make the experience great, blah, 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 blah.
No.
What percentage of your fans, A, come to more than two games, B, follow your team on the road? John is the connection to essentially all of your fans. And whether you do so intentionally or not, you have told the fans that they don't really matter, except the what money do you spend with us? That's what he's told the fans. And I've actually told this to Tom, so I don't even, and Dundon may be listening to this too, and I think Tom has done a lot of great things for the franchise. This was a monumental failure. And it has nothing to do with whether or not I like Mike, because I do. Whether I think Mike will do a good job, he has already, and he will. But there is a value in having the best broadcaster in the sport do your games 75 times a year. One who was willing to repay the team for the games he missed so you could pay a replacement to do those games. And every single time John was on national television, the people who follow the sport intently, and I know plenty of them who don't live here that know John as, oh, he's the Hurricanes broadcaster, recognize that, man, the Hurricanes got the best in the business working for them. And never forgiving is silly. I'm a professional, but it's a huge mistake. And I hope John gets the NBC gig. I really do. I hope he gets it.
It would be great for hockey. I mean,
right? It would
the
be.
The Hurricanes' loss would be great for hockey. And I, you know, I've said a lot of times this isn't a knock on a guy who's walking out the door, but I've never been a huge Doc Emmerich fan anyway.
Oh, really?
He's fine. Yeah, he's fine, but he's never been my favorite.
I can't believe, Alec, did you see, Corey just said that Doc Emmerich sucked.
Yeah.
Duh, Corey.
Yeah, I'm a mean person. I'm getting the guy out of the way.
I get that.
I think John would be just spectacular in that role. It's too bad it's not going to happen more naturally, and John gets to say goodbye the way he should have been able to say goodbye.
Yeah, it got messy.
That is a theme of the Tom Dundon era. I mean,
you mentioned Chuck, and I do want to wrap it up because it's getting late and it's cold on the screen and porch. The cicadas are even frozen. The Chuck Caton thing, the team lost money on radio, so I got it. It cost them more money to produce a radio broadcast than they were bringing in. So, economically speaking, I get it. Didn't like that decision either, but I get it. Dean doesn't lose money on the TV broadcast. I mean, maybe they don't make as much as they would have, but it's not like John's making $4 million a year. John isn't the highest paid local guy in the sport. Frankly, I don't know who is, but I know it's not John. He's near the top, but he was also not asking for more money. He would have accepted a little bit less, especially since we know what we're dealing with here, because he also knows that he's going to get more opportunity at NBC. But it didn't have to be this way. John could have come back. They could have agreed, but ultimately, I'll use a twist of a phrase. Tom Dundon made John Forslund an offer he couldn't accept. Just like he did with Chuck. Because this is what Tom wanted. He wanted to go cheap for this, and that came out bad. Sorry, Mike. but, I mean, that's what he wanted. He wanted to spend as little money as possible on something that he places no value in. That's where we are.
I mean, the word that jumps out to me whenever we talk about this kind of stuff, whether it's, you know, John or Chuck or anything, is nostalgia. And I just don't think Tom has any time for nostalgia.
He's a big Whalers fan, though.
Unless there are dollar signs hanging off of it. And I'm not, you know, it's absurd to suggest that Tom is doing this to make money, because this, you know, he could use his money in a lot of other ways other than a hockey team to make more money. So, you know, let's not act like he's doing this as some grand scheme to line his pockets. However, we know how he made his money, and we know he's not going to.
You went there.
No, let's be honest. He made his money. It wasn't like he came up with a product like an iPhone and sold it. He made his money by knowing the numbers. And that's what he does.
So diplomatic. Alec, can you be that diplomatic?
No, absolutely not. I would have completely blown whatever trust and faith in him I've ever garnered.
I'm just going to let it hang out there.
Yeah, so I mean, no. we know Tom's not one for nostalgia.
No, he looks at everything on the ledger,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and that's exactly
the way he makes his decisions, and that's just That's just the nature of how he does business. He hasn't lived here. He hasn't been around, you know, for this team. He hasn't listened to John Forslund regularly, you know, so he has no emotional tie to any of these things. So it's simply, what's the return on my investment?
All right. Shouts to Deep River. Right? That beer's got to be done. Is that a second one?
Yeah. No, it's gone.
Are you a one beer a night guy?
No, but I'm an upstairs guy when the beer fridge is in the garage outside. So.
Ah, gotcha. Shouts to, what was that wine again, Alec?
Liberté.
That's what all Americans need right now.
You're not our sommelier, but you're our sommelier.
Thanks to Corey Lavalette and Alec Campbell. I appreciate your time, both. Let's do it again. We set a record. I've never gone this long in a podcast. You guys are good for my stamina.
Well, glad we could be of service.
Thank you so much.
I'm not going to let that one hang in the air.
We'll do it again. Thank you, fellas. Well, that was fun. Thanks to Corey Lavalette and Alec Campbell for spending way too much time. This has been the Canes Corner Podcast. I am Adam Gold. I hope you liked it. We'll come back in a couple of weeks with another one. Don't know when exactly. Don't know who exactly. But I'll do it. So maybe it won't just be me. We'll have somebody else with us. But thank you very much. And you don't have to wonder when the next one's coming if you simply subscribe to it, because it will show up in your feed wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple or any other way to get your podcast. I don't really know the other ways. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you down the road on the Canes Corner Podcast.
You've been listening to the Canes Corner Podcast with Adam Gold. Don't forget there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsBand.com, the WRAL SportsBand app, and you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the Canes Corner Podcast.